Love Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Rebooting the News. This week, we have a surprise. Jay Rosen, my normal partner in the rebooting of the news, is actually on his way to Toronto right now. He's going to the Mesh 10 conference, which sounds really wonderful. Lots of really cool people there. And so I invited a guest on the show. And his name is Jeremy Zylar. And
hello, Dave.
Hi, Jeremy. We're good. Okay. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. Jeremy had a little bit of stage fright. I bet he's really freaking out right now. Jeremy, you're freaking out?
No. I'm okay.
Really? Okay. That's good. Jeremy and I are friends, I'll have to say. A big fan of his. I met him, I guess it was a little bit less than a year ago. He works at the New York Times, and he is the... what's your title?
I'm the blog specialist in / design at the New York Times.
So what do you do? Tell us about what you do at the Times.
Well, I've been there for about 4 years, or a little over 4 years. And I, in a lot of ways, in the shortest way to explain it, I'm the blog gardener. So from the design end, I... help design features for the blogs, design how they get used throughout the newsroom, how the readers experience them.
Right.
And I walk a lot of editors, writers, and people in the newsroom through the production of blogs and make sure that the process is smooth.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's cool. I'm cracking up here because we're playing an experiment. We're both Angry Birds players. And if you don't know what Angry Birds are, we'll tell you about them later. We both play Angry Birds.
we're coming to you live from
totally.
From the zoo.
So you started there 4 years ago.
Did
the New York Times have blogs 4 years ago?
Yeah, when I started, there was about three or four blogs, maybe five blogs or so. Some were on WordPress, some were on Movable Type at the time. But then we immediately started making quite a lot of blogs. By the end of the year, I started in April of 2006, and by the end of the year, we had like 55 blogs.
You're kidding. Are those people, okay, so is that 55 different people that are blogging?
Or no, it's
some
actually...
Some people do more than one blog, or...?
Well, that definition's really changed over the years, and how some blogs were focused on one person, you know, like David Pogue's blog, you know, that's
right.
His blog.
Right.
But some other blogs were focused more around a desk or an idea.
Be an example of a desk that had a blog?
Carpetbagger. That was a blog that had existed before I arrived. But it was David Carr was writing to it. But so were some other people from the movies and kind of
so media. So it's a movie
desk.
Blog then?
Yeah, and it would surface around the Oscars and
now,
on the run-ups. Like,
I see, yeah. Of course, I've seen that one, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of my role after initially kind of getting the platform running and getting things in place was, in order for it to be used right, there was needed to be a good amount of education to get people to... use it in a favorable way.
Do you mean education, like how to use the tool, or education in terms of how to think about a blog?
I think both, actually. And even a lot of education about the internet. I would say that more than half of the education in teaching anybody to blog, whether it's, you know, at the Times or outside of the Times, is basically teaching people web literacy skills.
Mm-hmm.
So... like what a URL is and a little bit more advanced than that is like how to understand what query strings are in URLs and removing them when linking to things or keeping them for certain reasons. Just basically the basic idea that you can even right click on an image and that image has a specific URL to it and to even teaching people basics of key commands, Control C, Control V, or copy and paste.
Right.
Because working on the web's
would you say the people at Times were receptive to this?
Yeah, very yeah. much so. The culture was, I think they're as receptive as most people are out in that I've experienced out even outside of the times. Mm-hmm. You know, you reach a few people who are a little adverse to the technology, but if you find the right, if you just find the level that they're at, and start teaching from there, it's a lot easier. Because mm-hmm. some people really are still just only using the mouse. They're going up to the menu bar at the top. They're selecting edit. They're selecting copy to copy the text. And if you show them like the basics that holding down Control C, and then using Control V for copy and paste, and you focus on that little bit of efficiency, that can really change their lives and actually open doors for you to be able to come in so later and teach them stuff about bookmarklets.
Do you have classes at the times? Do you have like every Tuesday you meet and people can come?
Yeah, I was holding a regular Friday blog training class, mm-hmm. and but more so now everybody's pretty much been trained, so now it's on a one-off basis when we gather some people together and we focus on some specifics. But it was kind of nice to set up a regular time. Say every Friday at 3 p.m. is blog training class. And I run an internal blog at the Times called The Kitchen Sink, mm-hmm. Along with other people from the blog team.
How many people are on the blog team?
Like three or four,
really?
Four or five.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people have duties that extend beyond the blog team, so they're kind of like half on, half off. But it's actually fairly small. We're a small, tight-knit group. So, mm-hmm.
What's interesting is that, you know, the theme of this podcast that has been surprisingly long-lived. I mean, originally, I was just interviewing people, and just because I don't know, I felt like interviewing various different people. I swung around to Jay Rosen, and we had this great conversation. And so I said, let's do this again next week, and just it sort of like became a regular thing. Our theme is, as you know, rebooting the news, which is sort of like, okay, we believe that the news is a continuum, right? We're always going to have news, but the way we do the news and way we receive the news and, you know, is changing. And our thesis actually is that it has already changed. And, you know, it's sort of like we're learning how that works. And
yeah.
So what makes your story interesting is that you're a force for the rebooting of the news inside of you're like 2.0, version 2.0 of the news existing in a 1.0 context. So you are the rebooting element inside of, or part of the rebooting
element. I am one of them.
Yeah, I don't want to, I'm not trying to blow your ego up or get you in trouble, you know, by having you come on here and say that you're the future or whatever. But it is interesting that, you know, here you are sort of in the middle of, I imagine there must be some resistance at times to people who say, well, you know, what do we need him for? We don't need blogs. We shouldn't be doing this. Or do you find that there's much of that or?
I think that's that question comes up from time to time, but more so in terms of like, well, how do they operate in the news cycle? How do they differ from
well, is there a news cycle anymore?
And how do they, or, you know, the daily, the minute-to-minute news cycle, like when a story breaks.
Right.
Well, that's the story will be broken on a blog, but then the next story might get an article written for it. And so,
is there a difference between an article and a blog post?
That's a good question.
Well,
actually.
Is there? Well, that's the answer. I mean, it seems to me that the buck stops with you. I mean, you have to know that answer now.
Well,
doesn't that come up all the time?
It does come up all the time, and it depends on who you're talking to, actually.
I'm talking to you, Jeremy.
But the
what do you think?
I think there is, but I highly question my own viewpoints just because I'm inundated and saturated with blogs all day. So right. I'd like to, I want my views to be aptly questioned, I guess, on this point. But the main difference is the continuity that exists in a blog. And it's the post that comes before and the post that comes afterwards, the context that happens on a blog that didn't really happen in a newspaper. The context was relied on the fact that the assumption that you read the newspaper yesterday, or that context, as Jay has pointed out a number of times, is buried within the story down at the end.
Jay also talks about there being a need for the comprehensive background piece, the static piece of journalism, you know, the story about oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico that is, you know, a 100-year story, right?
Yeah.
That's constantly being updated versus the story of, you know, the capping of the well, you know, that what progress was made on that yesterday. That sort of like two different threads going on at the same time.
Right. You know?
I mean, ultimately, maybe this is a question. I was going to assume that at some point the New York Times will stop publishing a newspaper. I don't know if that's... Well, I know we don't know. Neither of us know, but it seems to me that that's a given that at some point that will happen. No?
I don't know that...
I mean, that sort of daily news cycle thing, right? I mean, I've been watching old episodes of The West Wing lately, you know, which was a 10-year-old show or something like that?
Right, right.
And it's fascinating to see the changes, the things that in the context of that TV show today are completely anachronistic. You know, and that's, blogs did exist then in the West Wing. Maybe 10 years. Maybe it isn't quite 10 years yet, but...
I think
they were very obsessed with the news cycle, 24-hour news cycle, which I don't think we think of as being nearly as important today as it was then.
I don't think asking that question is the right question to be asking.
Okay.
Like, I think trying to figure out how somebody can get that context and get the news delivered across the full spectrum of all the readers is the better question to be asking, and then we'll see how the paper helps to fill that need. That's my opinion on
I don't understand that. What's this? I mean, when you say the full spectrum of the readers,
You have something that I try to take into account, or that we all try to take into account, is that we have very advanced web internet readers. Who definitely know that when they land on one of our articles or blog posts that it is a blog, and that and that the byline might be clickable to like see more posts by that author, and that they can comment, and they're very aware of navigation. Other people, you know, are more low-level users of the internet, and they don't know the difference between a blog. They don't even know the difference between a blog and a blog post.
Right.
And so so a lot of people will start calling...
I think that's terminology. I think they understand that there's a difference between the whole thing and an individual element in the thing. The terminology gets confusing.
Right. Or even like when they think that when they go to a blog... they can blog on that blog by leaving a comment.
Again, that's terminology. I don't think that there's a fundamental misunderstanding there of how the pieces fit together. That they're on somebody else's blog when they're doing that. That I don't think they missed that point.
Right.
That's been going on. Howard Dean had that problem himself. He used to talk about people blogging, and they were just people leaving comments on his blog. You know.
Yeah.
That's, of course, not the same thing. Another question comes up. You know, I think that we've had this, you know, because you're a regular member of the Thursday evening group that we have here at NYU, that there's another terminology problem, perhaps even deeper, that what you think of as a blog at the New York Times isn't what I think of as a blog. And this has come up where, I had this email back and forth with the editor of Wired. I was going to try to mask the name of the publication. What's the point? And I said, you know, what you need for the future is you need to incorporate more bloggers into your editorial content. And from that, I got back sort of a you know, what do you mean? I mean, we have all the blogs we could possibly want at this point. And of course, that wasn't what I meant. And I've said that the New York Times should have bloggers on their op-ed page, you know, that would help to bring, you know, they claim to have a reader's editor. I don't believe that he's in any way a reader's editor. You know, right. It's a fancy title, but he has nothing to do with representing the reader's point of view. But as far as I can, and the Times would probably come back and say, well, we already have every one of our editorial writers, op-ed writers, has a blog, so therefore they're bloggers. But I don't think so. I think the only blogger that the New York Times has on that page right now is Krugman. You know, Krugman strikes me as, it's more of a philosophy. It's a sort of like, when do you decide something belongs on your blog, and, you know, versus, you know, how formal is that process? I mean, Krugman writes 20 blog posts a day sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and he doesn't need much of a reason to write a blog post. It's an idea occurs to, you know, what I call a natural born blogger will be taking a shower and will think of something and say, man, I got to get that out to everybody, and then instantaneously make the jump that, oh, I have a blog, let me go put it on my blog. It doesn't matter if 5 people read the person's blog or 50,000 people read the person's blog, the thought process is exactly the same. Whereas on the Times, I'm just guessing, and I have a little bit of knowledge because you and I have talked about this, but that there's an editorial process that they go through. It's not an individual writing. It's there's a team of people that are involved in creating the blog post. So, I mean, we've got screwed up terminology in that everybody's responsible for that, including the professional journalists have screwed up the terminology here. I think we understand, no matter who writes your paycheck, right, we understand that there's a difference between an individual who's blogging as a passion versus a person who is doing it as a profession, right?
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
And another spectrum. I'm sorry.
But I think for me to actually cross-check, for me to cross-check what the Times is doing, I think of, well, how would somebody do it on the outside of the Times, because the Times is very isolated, and it's important to think of the whole problem outside the Times. If you think of blogging as a means to kind of bring a group of people together to coalesce around a stream of ideas, like that is where that group blogging mentality comes. It starts to take shape, and I think you start to lose less of that individual voice, because there are times in the world when groups of people want to get together to write about one given topic or one given subject.
Like, for example?
Well, like I started a Tumblr blog recently with a few people I met on Twitter, and
what was it? Was there a topic for that?
Yeah, it was I'd tweeted something about a song that I liked by a band called The Books, and somebody else said, oh, that's a fantastic song, and then his friend said, oh, you should also check this out, and I said, we should start a Tumblr blog based off of those two songs.
Really? Collecting just like two songs?
Yeah, collecting like music, you know, which is mostly like found sound and modern classical.
And how has that been going? Do you keep posting on that?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Because I tell you about another experience, similar one that I had recently, and this will segue into another topic that we should talk about. You know, a friend of mine, Deanna Zant, who lives in Brooklyn, she became very outspoken about Facebook with the recent changes in privacy, and she was writing, and she was actually more linking to a lot of articles that were, you know, she had developed a specialty, basically. And so she sort of became a go-to person for the, you know, what you might think of as a rebellion against what Facebook was doing. And so she was doing a fairly comprehensive job of covering this. And so I suggested to her, why don't you start a blog about this, you know, and be a formal, you know, source of information about this. And I was thinking of that of it one way, and she was thinking about it a very different way. I said I would even contribute to it. because, you know, this is a hot topic. It's sort of like it relates to a lot of things that I want to do, like the flash conference idea that something is really, you know, developing very quickly and it's going to be hot for, you know, 30 to 60 days or something like that. Let's get a group of people together about 30 days into it and, you know, have an intense discussion on it rather than have a conference where this is one of the topics 6 months from now when it's no longer even fresh. But her take was that this was going to be anti-Facebook, and so when she created the site, it had that theme, and I said, this isn't what I want, you know. I'm not even anti-Facebook. I mean, you know, I have a different point of view. So I said, let's create a big umbrella, and, you know, one thing, it's hard, see, my point is that maybe on a song it's possible, or an art form or whatever, for people to share a perspective and not be, you know, not have a need to have each person have their own space where they're writing. But when you get to something that people have intense feelings about, that to find a commonality amongst of a bunch of people sort of spoils the whole thing, right?
I think that's inherent when you bring people together. There's an equilibrium is found.
Right.
And that's like, you know, you bring 12 people into a room and you lock them in a room for 12 hours and like, they're all going to like, an equilibrium will essentially...
You ever done jury duty? I have
jury duty on Thursday. Actually.
Do you really?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
That's the right attitude.
It's one of the best things. Like,
I felt that way. We went all the way to verdict in the jury that I was on. And I felt after that it was one of the most exciting things I had ever done. Even though when you look at it on the sort of up, you know, as going into it, it's what a pain in the ass. I have to give up my life for 3 weeks or whatever.
There's something to that point about that equilibrium that happens on a blog with that group of people.
I've never seen it happen. I mean,
think about, like, there was a story I told you about once about a composer, a modern composer who, and I'm going to botch the description of this, but his name is Terry Riley, and he composed a piece in like 1964 called In C, and it's basically, I'm reading it from Wikipedia, In C consists of 53 short numbered musical phrases lasting from half a beat to 32 beats. But basically, a group of people comes together. The group is determined by whomever is organizing in C, and they play.
Sorry. I have all these little, my family here. Sorry.
But everybody plays in the key of C.
Right.
And as an hour goes by, there is an equilibrium found in the music, and the music is meant to expose the ebb and flow of people trying to fill the silence in between the noise.
I love it.
Williamsburg
is like that. Brooklyn is like that.
So you see that actually on Twitter a lot. So I follow, I basically follow the chorus, right? I follow people who have like values in me. I follow a lot of people that don't have like values so that I can add some discord in there. But people end up trying to find that space, the space that nobody's talked about,
right,
in between two blog posts, and trying to fill that up.
Well, but we're still batting around the terminology, okay? Because I think there's also a place for the pure individual, right?
The pure individual has the ability actually to cut right through that noise in the right way, because there's the human element.
That's what blogging is, in its essence, is the individual. It is not a group thing.
Right.
It is the individual without interference. This is why I've always felt that the pure blogging experience doesn't have comments, that the blogger doesn't worry about what people are going to think about what he or she writes. I mean, it's impossible to disconnect from that, and sometimes it gets very intense. But the best blogging that I've ever done, the best writing I've ever done, has been when I completely disconnect from what are people going to think when they read this.
Yeah.
You know, and I just write simply what it is that I have to say. But I know what you're talking about. I mean, I went to Williamsburg on Saturday, and I saw something that was similar to a place called Christiania in Copenhagen. Have you been there?
No. I saw you twittered about that.
Christiania is the most amazing phenomenon. And then I read more about it, because things found out things that I didn't know about it. They have this concept of architecture without architects.
Yeah.
And and you could tell. I mean, it so totally describes what Christiania is about. You know, it's like there is no architecture to the place whatsoever.
Can I make a quick point?
Of course.
Going back to
this is
one of the topics that you talk about a lot is, well, how do we get more people on the web, more people doing this? And I think it is a bit more, it is the education aspect of being able to teach people how to blog, being able to teach people basics of how to use their browser efficiently and stuff, all the tools that are needed. It's a complicated process, yeah. I think, for most people to take on. And from when I talk to other news organizations, I think I hear a lot of grief about that same thing. So,
well, you probably have a pretty good perspective on what we need to do, I would imagine. Probably better than most people do, in terms of, I mean, are there breakthroughs possible in this software? Are there barriers that could be broken that would make it possible for more people who aren't blogging to be blogging, or for people who are blogging to be infinitely more expressive with
it?
Yeah,
I think like...
What are some ideas?
Well, I had some... I recently set up a blog for my dad, actually, and he wants to blog about... or is blogging about, like, a green building, and I was like, are you sure you want to blog? And he said, yeah, I want to write to it, and I want to publish stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll set this up. And I set him up, got him a URL, set up the blog and everything. And then I sat down with him when he was in New York to show him stuff. And he was like, well, where do other people post things? Where do I start seeing what other people are writing about? Mm. And what I found out is that he kind of thought that he was getting his own little Facebook or his own...
Maybe we should give that to him. I mean, you know, we had that.
But the interesting thing was...
Give him an aggregator, right?
In the process of teaching him how to use WordPress, the part that he couldn't get his mind wrapped around was the fact that there was a back end, that there was this whole other website that controls this other website, basically. Things with whole, totally different interfaces, buttons, language that doesn't make sense.
Right.
And
you mean the editorial system?
Yeah. The content management system. And it occurred to me that, you know, he has been using Facebook and Flickr, and those, they don't expose that. And so he's not coming from this world of this idea that there is a content management system.
I don't think there should be a content management system.
And it actually made me really, it made me realize, I mean, I haven't had the time to explore this, but you could easily build a WordPress theme that has all the tools exposed on the front end. And a lot of people kind of have. There's a few WordPress themes that kind of do this, but none that really take advantage and flesh it out really well in a way that I think would get people...
It's a really interesting distinction there.
And it comes down to theme design, right? It comes down to WordPress theme design. So, like, there are occasionally needs to go back into the back end and do stuff. You've got some really complicated posts with, like, 6 bits of MP3s and these players, and it's kind of crashing in with some YouTube video you've got, and you need to go in and monkey around with stuff. But for 90% of posts, for I'm sure 90% of bloggers, there's probably very little need to go into the back end to do stuff. And actually, recently I set up, helped an editor that I work with set up a Tumblr blog, and she's just amazed by it. She's just like, wow, this is so easy. This is like a true weblog. I'm able to collect and organize stuff, and it's really simple and it's really basic. And Tumblr is basic, but I've had some, I've reached some limitations personally with it, with like just on this music blog that we started on Tumblr, actually, and where I wanted to post like two different MP3s and compare them, and I couldn't. I was like, oh, you can only post one per post. Mm. So there's a certain set of limitations that I ran into that I wasn't quite expecting, but and in some cases, like, I find their interface to be a little too simplistic. But
yeah,
I don't know. I think simplifying the road for people to publish and making it really clear for people where that content goes. Because the other thing is that we're all kind of modern internet plumbers now, and describing to people that their content has what we call downstream dependencies is.
What does that mean? What do you mean by downstream dependencies?
Well, your content feeds into Google News, or that your content feeds into services and can be picked up by services, and
yeah.
And that some crazy player that you threw in will show up or won't show up on things, or how your site looks on a mobile site.
I've heard from beginners that were confused about the difference, the direction of linking, that they felt that when they linked to somebody, that would inform them of their existence.
Yeah.
When it's kind of the opposite, that they would be, you know, that the whole idea, although actually in a way it makes kind of sense. You know, if I talk about somebody,
And that
they would be aware that they're being talked about. Well, the web doesn't really do that very well.
No. And it actually should, because I think for most people that are describing, you kind of have to coerce people into linking things. Well, why would I do that? Why would I send somebody away?
For a natural-born blogger, that is actually the first primary thing that they want to do.
But you know, so, well, why would I want to send traffic away? And one of the things you kind of throw out there,
Do you get that question a lot?
No, not anymore.
No, but you used to.
I think occasionally people still want to edit open links in a new window.
Let me switch gears a little bit. I want to ask you. I mean, this is really incredibly valuable to, you know, sort of have a window into what your life is like there at the Times. The Times is mostly one way, right? It mostly is editorial people from the Times sharing what they learn with the rest of us, right? It's fundamental to what the Times is. Or is it fundamental?
Well,
will there be a day when the Times will... I mean, could be because... And this leads into sort of what we're talking about a lot in the Thursday evening context, is that if you were to take the totality of New York blogs... And, you know, sort of really get to know them and figure out which were the most sort of eclectic and weirdest and interesting. You know, you taught me an idea, a concept, the New York moment,
right.
You know, which we've been trying to figure out what that exactly means. You know, a New York moment is when, you know, you see people of three different nationalities doing what people from those nationalities would be doing, completely oblivious to what the other people are doing, but without interfering, while a million people are rushing by all over the place.
Yeah.
You know? And meanwhile, you know, everything's being dug up in one side and being put back together on the other side, because New York is constantly being taken apart and put back together.
Yeah.
You know, there's this idea of what is a New York moment, and capturing that in a web publication, you know, on a moment-by-moment basis, that's sort of like the dream, right? That we would get to the point where you could actually get a feel, a steady stream of these New York moments, but experience it through the web, in addition to experiencing it by being present in New York. And I think that it's clear that the New York Times not only doesn't deliver that experience, but doesn't try to deliver that experience.
I don't know about that, actually.
Well, I said it in a way to challenge you, of course.
I just don't think...
But I guess my question... I'm going to stop in a moment and let you take over, okay? But the question really is, will the Times ever turn into an N-way channel as opposed to a one-way channel?
An N way.
Yeah, meaning that in every which way. In other words, will I be able to publish through the New York Times at some point?
I don't know the answer to that.
No.
But I mean,
well, what? Okay.
Starting from the beginning of that, in terms of linking out the Times, as far as news organizations go, the Times links out more than most.
But that wasn't the question.
You know, it's not necessarily just a one way.
That's not what I mean, though, at all. I understand that the Times does link out. That wasn't my question. I don't want to repeat everything I said.
No, that's okay. And the other thing,
I want the content flowing. In other words, I mean, I don't want it. I just want it. I mean, I'm wondering if the fundamental character of the Times will change. That's all I'm saying.
I think it will evolve over time, but it's a very slow process.
Yeah.
I think it's got to evolve with and this is the same problem that I think all news organizations are dealing with, is they have an existing structure that needs to be maintained every day and needs to function every day, and there's existing deadlines. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you change it while the existing structure?
But New York itself has solved that problem. I mean, you know, they shut down the one train every weekend, it seems. that's the story of life.
The street blew up outside of the Times building a couple weeks ago.
Is that right? So. I mean, the thing is that, you see, what you're saying is so hard is, ironically, what the city that this news organization is rooted in, right, is so good at, right? It's so good at, you know, I mean, how long ago was 9/11? Jeremy, I mean, think about it. I mean, how long after 9/11 did a sense of normalcy return to the borough of Manhattan? 2 years? I mean,
yeah.
You know, it didn't take that long. Well, was that upheaval on the same scale as the upheaval that's taking place in the news industry? I think it is. I think it was. In other words, our species seems very good at doing this. It's the news industry that seems to have a hard time making that. I'm asking, it's too challenging, and I don't want to put you on the spot. You know,
Yeah, I don't know that I can quite answer your question to the degree that which I think would answer it. Just because I, from where I see it, it is down to, it's on the one-on-one education level of everybody, getting up to speed with what's possible with the internet. And how it can serve them on a daily basis, and how it can be altered and changed. So, it really is down to teaching people bookmarklets, designing processes for that content to flow in the right directions. We're using a service called Publish 2 to organize around different blogs and different desks what we're reading.
What is that? What does Publish 2 do?
It's along the lines of Delicious or Google Reader. But the nice thing about Publish 2
they seem like very different things, though, Google Reader and Delicious.
Well, it's a social bookmarking site for journalists. So, but the nice thing about it is that a lot of the copy on the site is written more towards journalists than it is towards more web producers or web natives, and it allows you to create a group, actually. And so if we could create a group around our Thursday night meetup, and we can get everybody.
Is Publish 2 something that anybody can use?
Yeah.
Oh.
So the nice thing is that. We can create one around a Thursday night meetup and have all the members start adding links into that specific group, and we can add and remove people from the group as needed. So, and that's kind of that's been really nice on the front end because it's getting everybody who's working on one of these blogs to see what everybody else is reading and have a shared understanding of that, which I think goes a long way towards pushing the content and pushing the idea of the content and the scope of it.
Okay, we got a little bit of dead air there. I'm not going to push you on it. I'm sort of trying to figure out what is the landscape going to look like? Are we going to have? I think. Okay, let me just say what I think. I think we're going to have another publication, another New York publication, that stands alongside the Times, that does the things the Times won't do. I mean, that ultimately, I think that's where we're headed. That there's a lot of creative energy that exists amongst the people of the city, and that can be channeled to create something really exciting. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be about one organization, you know. It's in a sort of interesting sort of historical question, really, for me. You know, I got obsessed last week with Bleecker Street, and just the example of it, of the way a city evolves, you know, maintaining continuity, and yet making the adjustment to. I mean, look at all this stuff that flows through the streets of New York now that never used to. You know, you have
right.
I mean, things like electricity didn't used to flow through the streets, but certainly does now. I mean, they faced a problem that they needed to electrify the city. You know, at some point in its history, it went from being, you know, gas-lit streets to being electricity-lit streets.
Yeah.
And then electricity being delivered to the homes and offices in New York City. This all needed to be, infrastructure needed to be added. Well, we're talking about, and then you need communications infrastructure, you know, telephones, and then higher speed telephone wires to handle data communications. And then fiber is being pulled through all the streets in the city. Hopefully, you know, at some point we'll have it everywhere. But then there's the next level up, right, where you've got a city that operates at an intellectual level, an informational level, right? Those wires need to be pulled through too.
Right.
You know, and they're analogous to, if they're different from the wires, the physical wires that you pull through, but they're very analogous to it. The new pathways need to get created, and I think that's kind of the frontier. That's where, you know, the extracurricular work that you do and the stuff that I'm most interested in. It's like, how do we pull out? And I've met other people that are barking up exactly this tree. There's a site that, you know, we keep finding these nuggets, right? These beautiful sites that these individual, eclectic, artistic, creative sorts of people put up. And each one of them hits a different spot, right? And they come and go. You know, one week, this is the hot thing. You know, Jeremy finds, was it Jeremy or was it Zach? I forget. One of those guys found the Midtown Lunch site.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I mean, I don't care about Midtown Lunch, but I think what an interesting site that is, right? Well, what if there were 1,000 of those sites going on? What would the collection of all those sites be, you know? It certainly wouldn't be the New York Times or the New York Post or the Daily News, right?
Right, right.
It would be different.
Right.
But would it be covering the city? Absolutely.
90.
Would.
Yeah, it would be covering the city with a different narrative.
Right. And the people that sort of decry the demise of the traditional news say, who's going to be covering City Hall? Maybe that isn't even the issue. Who's going to be covering? We're going to be covering all these new things that news never covered before. That, you know, that but yet are still very interesting and vital, you know, that give you, that add up to the thing, the concept that you helped me see, which is
this 60 seconds
New York moment thing. Yeah, we have 60 seconds left.
Right,
so.
Right.
So I don't want to say that it all lands on the shoulders of one organization. It doesn't, and it clearly can't, right?
Right, right.
But we still have this opportunity, this incredible opportunity sitting there, and it's going to happen because too many people have figured this out at this point, that when you add up the sort of collection of all of the interesting things that are happening, that might actually be something.
Well, yeah, the sum of all the parts.
Whatever. Yes, you see, we're still at the point. Like the look at this effing hipster site. That was pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
And we never did get to talk about the Angry Birds. He wants me to put on the Angry Birds. Okay. Maybe we should let the Angry Birds. Okay, Jeremy, why don't you get your birds going? Oh, we got 10 seconds. Put it up, microphone. There it is. Okay, everybody, thanks so much. And thanks, Jeremy, for coming to be our guest here on Rebooting News.